Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today I'll be reading from the November 2024 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part two for the month. This section, we're going to be reading some articles about Step 11, Tradition 11, and also some personal stories. So let's get started. And our first story is entitled, Thoughts Come and Go. It's about Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. This story says that 30 years he was coasting, so he stepped up his game and jumped into AA, and this time he focused on meditation. When I first got sober, I was not a happy camper. My job was at risk, my wife had filed for divorce, my children were estranged from me, and I felt alone. I had moved into a small second-floor apartment and was carrying around a lot of resentments. I wasn't praying much in those days. I was going to meetings, did a 90 and 90, and I'd gotten a sponsor. He recommended that I start praying. My prayer in those days was simple. I am not alone. God is with me. I said it many times every day along with the Serenity Prayer, but I still felt alone most of the time. Pretty soon, going to meetings let me connect with people who could relate to how I felt. I made some friends and I started on my path to recovery. I just celebrated 30 years recently, and I'm grateful to say that it worked. I can also say that my little prayer helped me then, and it still helps me now. A few years ago, I was celebrating an AA anniversary. When it came my turn to speak, I said that I felt like I was just coasting, going to one meeting a week and not sponsoring anyone. I did have a sponsor, but my meetings were more social than focused on recovery. Afterwards, someone came up to me and said, "You know, you can only coast one way." That hit me. I knew it was true. You can only coast downhill. Well, I knew what the bottom of that hill looked like, and I sure didn't want to go back there. I decided to pick up my game. I started attending more meetings, sponsoring, and praying regularly. Meditation, however, was still not something that I was comfortable with. Many years ago, I tried to meditate. I had resisted it, but not for any specific reason, but because I didn't understand what it was. I was caught up in my pursuit of material things. Much later, I tried meditation again and still couldn't do it. I had assumed that when you meditated, you cleared your mind and slipped into a more peaceful, even blissful state. But I couldn't clear my mind. The more I tried, the more I was bombarded with thoughts and ideas. I couldn't stop them. In fact, many of those ideas simply carried me away with them. I developed them, built castles in the air with them. So I bought this meditation book for dummies. I scanned through it like a dummy and concluded it was worthless. I joked about that to my friends. Finally, at the suggestion of a good friend, I went to an 11th step meditation AA meeting. I felt somewhat uncertain being there. The meeting chair read some instructions in preparation for a 20-minute silent period. I don't remember all of what he read, but I heard the words, "Thoughts are inevitable." It was a huge relief to hear that. Then I heard something about letting thoughts go, gently returning to your center, and paying attention to your breath. When the timer started and the lights dimmed, I sat there in the silence and started to let go of the myriad thoughts that came to me. I just let them go. I didn't hold on to them or take one thought to another in sequence. I simply focused on my breathing. I had come back to that starting point again and again. I couldn't stay focused for very long, but I kept trying. It felt good, specifically that thing about letting thoughts go. So I went back again the next week. The more I sat meditating in those sessions, the more I practiced letting my thoughts go, not entertaining them, not holding on or valuing them in some way. The ideas that bombarded me in meditation are pretty much the same kinds that do so in the rest of my day. Some are seductive. They tell me to pay attention to them. They're ideas that seem worth thinking about. I try to let them go, but frequently they return again and again. I breathe and focus on that. Some thoughts are fearful. Worry about this, they say. I let them go. They don't always repeat themselves identically. They produce variations on that theme. Well, what about this then? Sometimes I go with them and then I remember to let go. To come back to the present, I once heard that trying to focus on the moment where your breath turns from in to out and then from out to in is a helpful technique. Something started happening as I went week after week. I started letting go of thoughts at other times outside of meditation. My practice has shown me that I could do that. I didn't let my thoughts carry me away. I was calmer, more at peace. I began to listen more. Now I try to meditate daily, sometimes sitting, sometimes walking, sometimes with music, other times in silence. The practice makes a difference. It's not a focus thing. It's a striving, not a striving for improvement. It's gentle. It's calming. And dare I say it, it's fun. I love the change I see in myself as a result. I'm not such a prisoner of my thoughts anymore. With practice, I've found that even when I'm not actually meditating, I can recognize and release those foreign ideas that float into my mind. I let anger go. Critical thoughts of others, clever little cuts or comments directed at actions or words from those around me. Judgments, quick and stinging, are let go. They're not who I want to be. The thoughts sometimes come like a sudden thing. Other times they're slowly igniting. They're just passing through. I let them go by. I breathe and I gently come back to the present. Meditation has given me the gift of letting go. Daily meditation or even occasional meditation changes me for the better. I'm so grateful to have made this deeper engagement with Step 11. It has really helped. Signed, Paul W. in Boulder, Colorado. And our next story is about the 11th tradition. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And it's entitled Big Shot. Need for recognition drove his drinking, but in AA he found anonymity was a way to become right-sized. My craving for fame started maybe by the third grade. That's when I remember taking up a whole piece of paper with my autograph. I then gave the autograph to Jocelyn, who was in the fifth grade. She seemed more puzzled by my gift than impressed. Though it's funny looking back, the truth is that by that age, I was already having trouble dealing with my thoughts and feelings. Projecting an image, the bigger the better, seemed to give me brief relief from that inner madness. But of course, the image never addressed the madness. A few years later, I started to drink and entered a decade of hell, and I tried to become known for something other than drinking so I could cover up my drinking. And because I was dead inside, I tried to project an image of fame and reputation. This facade seemed like my only reality. Once I remember being told that while drunk, I had won an argument with another guy in a group of friends I ran with. Even though I couldn't remember it and had probably been unkind to him, winning an argument made me feel like a success in my own sick way of looking at things. But in reality, I mostly got a reputation for my drinking. In spite of everything I tried, people weren't impressed, at least not in a good way. Once a coworker said he was concerned about me. They said you came to work drunk, he told me. Then at some work-related party, people said I'd been a bigger mess than Rob, the guy who usually took that prize. I don't remember much of that party. There was also the time I got plenty of attention, screaming so loud in a quiet neighborhood that the cops were called. Maybe worse were the things I did that people wouldn't talk about, at least around me. Puking and urinating on other people's things when drunk was something I did that I didn't hear about until after it happened, and it happened many times. Getting violent and abusive when drunk was another thing I did that no one told me about to my face. I began to get a view of myself, and it only grew more and more as I caused these drunken disasters. My view was simple. Someone who did what I did shouldn't be here. That's what I came into AA with, self-hatred. But what I found in AA was something beautiful. Right from the start, there was anonymity. Anonymity gave me a sense of starting over. Leaving my last name behind in meetings allowed me to feel like I was also leaving so much wreckage and all the guilt that went with it. Just being Chad, alcoholic, seemed to help me make a fresh person, a fresh start. Legally, thankfully, I got a sponsor to help me through the steps to start surrendering that past wreckage over to my higher power. I'd love to say that I did the steps so thoroughly that the wreckage is all gone now, but the truth is that the desire to be a big deal rather than the real deal, me, comes up intensely sometimes. If someone I know gets lots of attention on social media, I can still get upset by that. If someone share at a meeting gets singled out for praise and mine doesn't, I still get envious. I believe that's a sign that I have wreckage, maybe old, maybe new, and that I need to surrender. And that's okay. I've been blessed to see in our 12 and 12 that Bill W. wrote with great honesty about his drive to be the number one man. His words have helped me tremendously. In the article, Why Alcoholics Anonymous is Anonymous, now collected in our pamphlet, The AA Tradition, How It Developed, Bill wrote, "What a bang it gave me when I read those two-column spreads about Bill the Broker. Full name and picture. The guy who was saving drunks by the thousands. Do I get a bang when I see my name in print? Oh God, yeah. Now the world is catching on. My world, my ego says, would I be trying to make the fact that I'm an AA world news if not for our 11th tradition? My guess is yes. On social media, because I post frequently in private AA groups, I don't use my last name and I don't have my face pictured in my profile. Still, my big shot itis can flare up quickly in those groups. If I see that someone else's post has gotten lots of thumbs up and hearts, my mind can still start to race. But it helps me to see that my fake name and my lack of a photo there help me remember, nobody here really knows who you are. Chad. And then I get to come home to my home group and be with the friends who know who I really am, even if they don't know my last name. Signed, Chad P. in St. Louis, Missouri." Now for some personal stories. The first one's entitled, "The Best Thanksgiving Ever. How Service Saved the Day at a Holiday Family Affair." For travel reasons, my family decided to celebrate Thanksgiving holiday 1 week early this year. In addition to our large extended family, many friends were invited to join, and we ended up with a total of 46 people, 15 of whom were children under the age of 14. Besides the children, I was the only one at the celebration who doesn't drink. My family gathering seemed to contain only normal drinkers, people who I would not consider to be alcoholic. Nobody gets sloppy drunk, violent, verbally abusive, angry, or overly emotional. Most of the time when I'm at a family gathering, I don't even notice that people are drinking alcohol. There is always a very well-stocked bar at holiday celebrations, including fancy alcohols and sometimes very tasty-sounding concoctions that I've never heard of because I got sober before they were even went on the market. I never liked the taste of alcohol. I drank strictly for the effect, not the taste. So I always preferred the foo-foo drinks or the flavored alcohols if I was in a position to get them. Of course, at the end of my drinking, most of the time I would drink whatever I could get my hands on regardless of how it tasted. I needed that effect that came at once from taking a few drinks. Frequently during the family holidays, no doubt because I'm a little excluded from the focus of drinking, I tend to find myself feeling different, a little bit more of an outsider, a little bit more not part of. I know these feelings originate within me and have nothing to do with the way my family treats me. I know they love me and they treat me with love, respect, and kindness. This year, I had already helped with setting up the buffet, tables and chairs, place settings, and the usual stuff. But once that was done, we had to wait another couple of hours for the food to finish cooking. This is the time when everyone looks forward to, when they can relax, have their before-dinner drinks, talk, and laugh. I was nursing a glass of water and feeling like an outsider, feeling useless and beginning to get into some self-pity. Why can't I drink like everyone else? It's not fair, I thought. I then noticed that the smaller children were bored and running around the house, crying, fussing, arguing with each other. They were not having fun at all. Neither was I. I was instantly annoyed that the parents weren't paying attention to disciplining, insert complaint here, their children at this gathering. Oh no, I could feel myself becoming irritable, restless, and discontent. I knew I better do something quick. I decided to be of service by keeping the kids occupied. So I got out of my chair, rounded up all the kids, and took them outside into the backyard and organized them into playing as many of the old childhood games I could remember. We played hide and seek, red light, green light, mother may I, red rover, and duck, duck, goose. As time went by, some of the teenagers came out and joined in. There was more laughing and fun going on outside than there was inside. The kids were having a ball, and I think I was having more fun than they were. I didn't even notice how fast the time passed. Before we knew it, it was time for dinner. Because the kids had burned so much energy, they were all almost perfect angels during dinner. Not only did I have a blast keeping the kids happy and occupied, but that feeling of uselessness and self-pity had disappeared. I'd lost interest in selfish things and gained interest in my fellows. I had such a great time this year. Maybe I'll make playing with the kids part of my normal holiday routine from now on. Signed, Reagan G. in Mesa, Arizona. And this next story is called The Turkey Carver. Today he got back the family job of honor that liquor took away. On Thanksgiving, the turkey is the main event in my family household. When I was a boy, the art of carving the bird was passed on to me by my father. But later, my drunkenness on Thanksgiving kept me from carving the bird, and I found myself being fed on a tray in front of the television set so I could watch my football games, I thought. I learned later that my banishment was by request of family friends who dined with us on Thanksgiving Day and felt my eating habits did not enhance their meal. After 11 months in AA, I was asked to carve the family bird for family and friends on Thanksgiving. On my way to the kitchen, I counted noses and plates to see if I was eating with everyone else, and found out I was. As I was carving the turkey, I started to laugh, and I laughed until I cried, and then I laughed some more. It's a nice feeling to be welcomed back to the dining room table, and even nicer to be reinstated in the turkey carving department. Maybe through AA and my higher power, I can carve the bird this Christmas too. You know, I do not remember who won the football games last Thanksgiving, but I know who carved the turkey in my house, and for this, I am grateful. Signed, DB in Fort Myers, Florida. With a little help from my friends. She was in jail again for drinking, but this time she wasn't alone, and it began with a grapevine in the mail. On June 15th, 2017, I had my worst blackout drunk. All I know for sure is that after I had a minor surgery, I took the pain pills prescribed, and I don't remember anything else until I woke up later in jail again. I tried to manipulate and control my way out of jail before my violation of parole hit the system, but this time I could not get out. I was so disappointed in myself. I was 2 weeks into my 6-week visitation with my daughter. Her father was mad at me too because he had to fly from Florida to Iowa to pick her up. On top of all that, I came to find out I totaled someone else's expensive car. I had lost primary custody of my daughter that January due to my drinking. She was 3 years old then. This was going to be my third time to prison in Mitchellville, Iowa. One day, after a few months sitting in my prison cell, I was surprised to hear my name for mail call. I was pleased to find an issue of the Grapevine. I was fortunate to have an AA friend. Bob got me a 1-year subscription. I started to read it. I soon began to look forward to my monthly copy arriving. Unfortunately, I was sent to another unit and could not attend AA meetings, but I hung on to my AA grapevines and cherished every word. I also started reading the Big Book and Daily Reflections and the Grapevine Daily Quote. A couple of AA members from my home group started to visit me. This was the home group I had half measured. I was shocked that Bob and Sarah would drive for 5 hours and spend 5 hours' time to come see me. They were so kind to do that, and I didn't get many visitors other than them. Not even my daughter came to see me. I was in prison for 16 months before going to work release. Bob and Sarah opened their homes and gave me several rides to get to AA meetings. I was so impressed with how freely they gave their time. On Valentine's Day 2019, I was always allowed to serve my probation in Orlando, Florida, near my daughter. I was also so filled with joy to be reunited with her. The next day, we walked into a sober clubhouse together, and I've never left. I jumped into AA. I'd never say no to AA now. I'm so lucky to have lots of hospital and institution commitments. I love my sponsor. I get to sponsor other women and watch the miracles in their lives, too. I successfully completed parole. I haven't been arrested for now in 5.5 years, which is the same amount of time I've been sober. I love myself today and love most of all of that. I'm a good person. My daughter is 9 years old now. I'm hardworking, good mother, and I try to be helpful to others. I feel like I'm becoming the woman that God is designing me to be. But life isn't perfect. I still cannot drive until 2027 due to my past behavior. I'm so grateful for Bob and Sarah, and I'm extremely thankful for all the AA literature too. I thank God for AA, and to think it all started with one alcoholic being kind and getting another alcoholic a subscription to a magazine while she sat in prison. Signed, Jamie M. in Orlando, Florida. And this next story is entitled, I Had My Answer. A dreaded trip back home becomes a chance to repair the past and enjoy a moment of forgiveness. I was off to my hometown for my semi-annual trip to see my parents. I would visit my dad in the house I grew up in. And as for my mom, well, maybe that's why I was feeling upset. I called my sponsor, Jane, from the road. I feel like I've been to every psych ward and state mental hospital in Ohio, I told her, surprised by the rage in my voice. First, you have to calm down, Jane said, and if you need my permission, you got it. You don't have to see your mother on this trip. My sponsor delivered her words slowly and calmly, as though her tone could tame my emotions. I dropped my cell phone on the passenger seat. I took several deep breaths, another recommendation from Jane, and just kept driving. There was a time when I'd make the 8-hour drive nonstop until I had hit a bar in my hometown and had a couple before making my way to Dad's home. As a daily drinker, it was torture to stay sober all day. I always needed a drink to take the edge off. Nowadays, I hit an AA meeting before my arrival. This time, the AA meeting was in a garage attached to a private home. It was Bobby's house, just outside of town. There, Bobby and two other guys were assembled around a makeshift table, a half sheet of plywood supported by 2 sawhorses. Does anyone have a problem that might cause you to pick up a drink? Bobby asked. The question was familiar when I'd never had the nerve to answer until tonight, when my hand shot up and the rant began. I depicted myself as a dutiful daughter in detail, suffering all those teenage years sitting in the back seat of an old family car on Sunday, going the 40 miles up to the state hospital where Mom was a patient, and crying quietly the 40 miles back. I wasn't going to do it this time, I said. These guys would ordinarily discuss the trouble they're having with transmissions or their girlfriend or wife problems, took their best shot to help. First, they reassured me that I shouldn't be too hard on myself. Then, in the second round, they talked about forgiveness. One guy handed me a copy of Grapevine for that month, which contained an article on forgiveness. I listened politely. Forgiveness? What did my situation have to do with forgiveness? But as the weekend progressed, forgiveness was a recurring thought in my head. That visit home was packed with the familiar. Lunch at Lee and Helen's restaurant with Dad. Seeing some of the old gang from high school and all of us promising to get together next time. At home, there were the same lumps in the old mattress. The ramblings of Darlene, the housekeeper, as we visited her brother Herb's dairy farm across from old Route 327. Then a ride around Lake Alma. And this was the small town stuff I grew up with. That Saturday night, before I dropped off to sleep, I read the Grapevine article. Suddenly, it was Sunday, and my return trip loomed. In the morning, I was still having second thoughts about seeing Mom. She had been moved from the state hospital to a nursing home closer to town. Dad had just gone last week to see her, so he wasn't going. The nursing home was almost on my way out of town, but I almost drove past the turnoff sign, which was hard to see. I began to bargain with myself, with God. Who knows? If I didn't miss a turn off, I'd drive up to the parking lot. If I felt okay in the parking lot, I'd go in. It was silly, after all, to drive 400 miles and not see her. I wasn't mad at her, was I? And that's all the time on the road. The turnoff sign stood out like a flashing neon sign, and I drove to the parking lot. By now, my anger had morphed into confusion. What was I doing here? I sat in the parking lot and felt myself surrender. Show me what I'm doing here, I asked the universe, and I took the elevator up to Mom's floor. When I arrived, there was a church service in progress, complete with a preacher whose mission included this visit every week to save the assembled souls. I slumped into a seat in the empty row behind my mother and another lady as the closing hymn was ending. Mom didn't see me. At the end of the service, my mom leaned over to the woman on her right and said, "If my daughter were here, she'd trim my fingernails for me." I had my answer. I slipped out of the assembly and went to the nurse's station and asked for a manicure set. I greeted my mom. She was so glad to see me, I asked if I could do her nails. She chatted on while I took her hands and discovered why I was here, to forgive my mother for not being able to take care of me. Funny thing is, I recalled what I wrote in my fourth step about resenting my mother because she ignored me. I realized this was perhaps one of the few times in my life when I didn't ignore her. Signed, Susan M. in Anacock, Virginia. And that's all the time we have for this episode of the AA Grapevine, November 2024. This was part two. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I have been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.